This is KDOO Portland, 90.7 FM. My name is Jade Pekala, and I'm in studio here and with Corin Zailkas. Is that correct?
Yep, perfect.
Okay, and she's the author of a New York Times bestseller titled Smashed. And I must say, you know, in reading your book, I felt like I was reading a journal, you know, somebody's personal journal. And, you know, there's such a controversy about the memoirs. Mm-hmm. I was wondering, what do you call your book?
It's a memoir. It's about my true experiences drinking in high school and in college. In terms of James Frey, I think, the scandal really bothered me. It puzzled me. I went through a lot of different emotions about it. But it was pretty clear to me that from the beginning that he wasn't really working in the tradition of speak memory or stop time or the Liars Club or anything else. It seemed really kind of one-dimensional. Real life isn't that tidy. And I think in writing this book, I did want it to feel really honest. I wanted to be honest, to be earnest, and to really take a good hard look at myself and be tough on myself.
You're so young to have a book published by Penguin. You know, it was really amazed me that you're just a young gal and that you relayed this story that is really close to my heart because there's been a lot of alcoholism in my family and it took me years to understand it. Mm-hmm. And you're so young, you know, and you understood it so clearly at a young age. And what struck me when I first opened your book was in the preface when you talk about your father, being in your father's arms.
Yeah.
Kind of relay that.
I was 16, and actually it was this one memory that propelled me to write the book. When I was quitting drinking, I suddenly couldn't stop thinking about this one memory, something I hadn't thought about in a really long time, which was the night I had my stomach pumped when I was 16 after drinking too much. And at that time, I was still a young drinker, still inexperienced. I'd, of course, begun drinking when I was 14. But I didn't even know, for instance, that you had to wait a while for the alcohol you were taking in to take effect on your body. So I was drinking more and more, and I couldn't figure out why I wasn't feeling the effects. I was seeking that little bit of a buzz, and then everything after that was a blackout. So my friends at that time didn't want to get me in trouble. They brought me to a friend's house, called my dad because I'd missed my curfew. But he knew that something was going on. So when he came and found me in the condition I was in, just vomiting excessively, unresponsive, he brought me to the hospital, and he carried me into the hospital through the sliding glass doors.
That was a real touching point for me when I read that in the preface just on page one. You know, I thought I pictured that. You know, I pictured your dad carrying this young child, you know, into the emergency room to have her stomach pumped. That's a rude awakening.
Oh, yeah. I scared the bejesus out of them, I think, and I scared the bejesus out of myself. But it didn't last over time, I think. I told them afterwards that I wasn't going to drink again, and I believed
it. Of course.
And I didn't for a while, but I think in the end, at 14, 15, 16, what are we afraid of more than anything else? It's being isolated, being alienated. I didn't want to be left out. That scared me more than any consequence that could come from drinking too much.
It seems as though in reading your book that you kind of sought out friends that you looked up to, these people that were heavy drinkers. Tell me a little bit about Natalie.
I did. My friend that I had my first drink with ever was 14. She was my best friend. People up until that time, I was in 8th grade, I'd been offered alcohol before by other girls. I'd never taken them up on it because I didn't know them very well. But when my best friend, Natalie, I was over at her house one day after school, and she was rooting around the kitchen cabinets and pulled out a bottle of Southern Comfort. I did take that drink with her because I trusted her, and I thought it would be a way for us to bond.
So you considered it a bonding experience, secret that the two of you shared?
Yeah, I think I went into drinking thinking it would bring me closer to other people. I think that's the message that's out there in the world. It's out there in alcohol advertising. You rarely see a single person alone in an alcohol ad. The person with the bottle is usually dead center, and everyone else is vying for their attention, trying to talk to them or kiss them or dance with them. Or you'll see two women giggling over a glass of wine, telling secrets.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. And about the time that you went to the party and you filled your bottles with alcohol and you were there drinking and How did you remember all these experiences when you were drinking so much, and you've got such detailed explanations, and I could just see the picture when I was reading your book. I could just see the scene.
You
described it so clearly.
Well, I did. I mean, I had always kept journals, so they weren't entirely about drinking. They were sort of about everything else except for drinking. But also, I wasn't going too far back in time. This stuff was just in the near past. And beyond that, I think, of course, I always say I probably had better stories. I probably have things that were more humiliating, more horrifying, but I just don't remember them. I really only wrote about the memories I felt certain of and I had a clear picture of.
Through your journals?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
What about your first blackout? Was that an eye-opener for you?
Well, my first blackout ever was the time I had my stomach pumped. And actually, that was probably the most complete blackout I've ever had, the kind where I just remembered up until a certain point in the evening, and after that, everything fell off. I think when I got to college, I was having more of those Swiss cheese blackouts, whereby I'd just lose a half an hour here and there, and no one could really tell me where I was or what I was doing.
Or getting back to the dorm and not knowing how you got there.
Exactly.
Yeah,
or not making it back to the dorm, waking up the next morning on somebody's floor and thinking, wow, I guess I didn't make it home last night.
No, I guess you didn't. In your experience in growing up as a young teenager, the alcohol that you found, I mean, was it readily accessible in everybody's house? I mean, drinking is so acceptable in the adult world.
Yeah.
And so you just raided liquor cabinets?
We raided liquor cabinets. Someone always had an older brother who would come home from college and had no problem buying us beer for a keg party. I think there was an American Medical Association study last fall that taught us just how easy it is for kids to find alcohol if they want to.
There'll always be
gas stations that don't card. We can't hit all of them. And actually, this study found that girls had an easier time finding alcohol than boys did even.
They did.
I think, if we have a will to drink, we will find a way, especially
for
our teenagers.
That's right. It wasn't any different when I was young.
Yeah.
You know, alcohol was the drug of choice. There was the drug on the street was speed, but mostly alcohol was the drug of choice when I was coming up, and it was very easy for girls, to manipulate older guys to get get it.
Yeah, and I think also, I'm not convinced we think about it as a drug. It definitely seems like a lesser evil compared to speed or cocaine or marijuana or even cigarettes. Mm-hmm. I think we think about the addictive properties of cigarettes, but of course, the younger we are when we first try alcohol, the more likely we are to become addicted, to suffer from patterns of alcohol abuse or alcoholism. And I think definitely I ran into a lot of the problems I did because I was so young when I took my first
drink.
That's
true. You were just a baby.
I was.
Just a baby. Tell me about Billy.
Oh, Billy was one of my friends in high school who I really admired. I went to a regional high school, I was definitely afraid of being alienated when I first got there. I didn't know anyone. I had to build a new circle of friends. And I admired this girl, Billy, because she was the exact opposite of me. She was more outgoing, certainly, whereas I was more introverted. My mom was a stay-at-home mom. She felt overly present. She felt omnipresent. Her mom was a working mom. So I think we sort of envied one another's lives a little bit. But for as bad as Billy came off on the outside, she was really innocent, I think. And it was I initiated Billy into the world of drinking.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
You initiated Billy?
Yes.
Okay. What about Margaret Feeney? Your pen pal.
Oh, my goodness, my pen pal. After the first time I got drunk, there was a gap between the first time I ever tried alcohol and the first time I ever got drunk. But I think the first time I ever got drunk, I wrote to this pen pal that I had from a ballet camp that I went to the summer before. We'd always exchanged letters. And I wrote to her about it and how much fun I thought it was. And I told her I got smashed. That was the first time I ever used that word. And she wrote back in just abject disgust, saying, "I can't believe you're so susceptible to peer pressure. Do you know how many students die of drunk driving every year? You ought to really think about what you're doing." And I, of course, didn't want to hear that, so I just never wrote to her again. Cut ties.
Yeah, you do cut ties with people that are trying to set you straight.
Yeah, you do.
It's
so much easier to hang out with people who confirm that everyone's drinking as much and as often as you are, and I certainly found that in college.
That's true. This is KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM. My name is Jade Pekala, and I'm in Studio One with Corinne Zelkoff, and she has a best-selling book titled Smashed. It's a story of her bout with alcoholism, and she's just a young gal. She's in her 20s, very beautiful, and you certainly don't have the look of an alcoholic person. And, you know, so many times when people have a long period of time of drinking, you know, they really look the part, but you don't. You look like the all-American girl.
Yeah.
Kudos to you.
Thank you. Well, I think, unfortunately, it is. It's where the all-American girl is drinking younger and more than she ever has.
That's true.
It's really just happened since the 90s in the past 10 years. Boys have sort of leveled off in terms of their drinking, and women, we've just shot up. Girls are now drinking as much as boys, and if we keep drinking at this rate, we're going to drink more than
That's
they are.
True. What do you think about AA? Have you ever gone to AA?
I've been to a few AA meetings. I didn't 12-step when I decided to quit. I didn't go to rehab. I wasn't in therapy. I couldn't afford health insurance. So I wouldn't recommend it for everyone. I think the best thing to do if you're considering quitting, of course, is to go and meet with an addiction counselor, figure out what's available and what'll work best.
Do you still go to counseling?
Oh, no, I don't. It's very much in terms of my own quitting drinking, my own abstinence. I really decided to stop and quit and didn't have a drop since then, and it's been 3 years at least. And I think I didn't necessarily have that addiction, that craving that I still feel for cigarettes. Cigarettes were harder to kick. But I think that isn't to say that alcohol didn't cause me lots of problems in my life. I think maybe if I'd waited longer, if I'd kept drinking for 5 more years, I couldn't say that it'd be as easy to stop.
Usually, from my experience of talking with alcoholic people that I've known in my lifetime, you know, they never lose that desire to drink. You know, a full-blown alcoholic really, really has that thirst.
Yes.
You know, they want that taste. They want that warm feeling mm-hmm. that you get when you take that drink, that buzz that seems to be harder and harder right. to achieve, you know, the longer you're into the throes of it.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And I think people are always asking me if I want, if I can drink, if I can drink just a little, if I could drink responsibly if I want to. And in my case, I don't want to drink. I think when I sat down, it's the last thing I want. When I sat down and really realized the reasons why I was drinking, because like so many people, I have those knee-jerk reactions that I drink to socialize or celebrate or relax. And of course, those are things the industry teaches us. They're social constructions. When I sat down and realized I'm drinking because I never learned how to bond with my female friends in any other real way, or how to express interest in men,
mm-hmm.
Or just feel confident and comfortable in a social situation, I realized if I was going to keep relying on alcohol to achieve those things, when would I learn it without it?
That's true. I remember meeting a person one day that I knew was an alcoholic, and we were in a social setting, and this person had a drink in his hands, and I said, I thought you were an alcoholic. And he said, I am, but I don't drink alcoholically anymore.
Oh, wow.
And, you know, that to me meant that he still had his problem.
Right.
You know, and tell me about your first offense, and that was an interesting chapter.
Oh,
in your
my
book.
First offense, the
yeah.
first time my ever parents caught me drinking, I was with my best friend Natalie. We'd gone on vacation together. She was staying with my family. We were in a hotel room. And we decided on the beach, we decided to climb out the window and go for a walk, and found these college parties where boys who were working down at the beach for the summer would throw these keg parties. So we snuck out the first time, nothing happened. We snuck back in, weren't caught. Second night, snuck out. I lost my friend Natalie. When I found her, she was barely conscious. I couldn't possibly bring her back through the window. We walked through the front door. My parents caught us. We had our first real talk about drinking then.
Your mom gave you some good advice. She really did. She really did.
When she said, oh, which part?
I think the part where your mom said that girls are responsible for nurturing one another.
Oh,
and
absolutely.
That you have to look out for each other, and that you can't separate when you go out. And, you know, just the advice that a parent, she wasn't judgmental.
No, she wasn't. I think.
And that's the part that struck me, that she was not judgmental, and that probably sank deeper into your heart and to your mind than if she had.
It did. I never forgot that. And I think always. Because, yes, we knew and we know that there are more risks for drinking women, especially in terms of men, date rape and sexual
sure.
assault. And so, yeah, I did take that to heart. And as I was drinking in high school and college, I always wanted to nurture my friends and take care of them and not separate from them. And when I did, and in the off chance that things went wrong, I always felt really responsible.
You should. You should. You know, when people go out together, you are responsible for each other.
And then I think, though, when we're drinking that way, we're binge drinking, drinking four or more drinks in a row for women, five or more for men, or just drinking explicitly to get drunk, it's impossible to be aware of other people. You're so caught in the echo chamber of your own head. It's hard to see past your fingertips. So I don't know. It's difficult the more we drink, I think, to take care of one another.
That's true. That's true. In the book on page 114, it says, do not buy, drink, or hide alcohol in your desk drawers if you're under 21. This is what they wanted in college. Yes. You know, they had their little checklist.
Yes.
And did you abide by those rules?
Advisors. No. Well, it was funny. As I remember my first week of college, the RAs on each floor sat you down and read you the riot act. And
did people pay attention to that, though? That's what I wonder.
We paid attention listening for loopholes. And the big loophole with our RA was, if I don't see it, I'm not going to go out of my way to get you in trouble if I don't see you drinking, if
that's
you don't flaunt it. Mm-hmm. So we just kept our doors closed.
So that's pretty much the way it is today, you know, from what I hear talking to young people. They just, they're undercover, more or less.
Yeah, very secretive. I think... it just goes to show, I think, universities, parents even sometimes would rather just turn a blind eye if they don't see it. It's not a problem.
That's the thing that shocks me, is that people, a lot of parents accept alcohol as okay, you know, not realizing that some people can deal with it and others can't. Our physiological, you know, physiological self is different in each person.
Absolutely. And I think parents, maybe they don't always have the education that they need. I think you ask the average parent, they don't know, as a lot of young people don't know, that our brains are continuing to develop from time we're 14 to the time we're my age, 24, 25, and that alcohol can... prevent brain growth from happening. It can stunt it in the frontal lobe, which is where memory and language functioning is.
Tell me about your experience with the sorority in college.
Yes, I joined a sorority in college. I never thought I would, but I sort of found such a contradiction. The anti-sorority sorority, they claim to be nonconformists. And they were definitely drinkers, although if you're in a sorority, the Harvard School of Public Health found, or a fraternity, you are more likely to be a binge drinker. And if you live in the actual physical house, you're way more likely, like 80% more likely. I definitely found access to alcohol in the Greek system. I found the opportunity to drink.
Did you find any in the Greek system that were non-drinkers? Did you find any chapters?
No. I don't remember any. Or if there was, we never had a party with them.
Probably not.
Yeah.
Probably not. Yeah, interesting.
And it's a shame, because I don't condemn the Greek system. I think sororities have the potential to be powerful vehicles. I'd love to see one that's really subversive, that fights for feminist rights on campus, fights for tenure for its female professors, and has its own website, its own zine, its own all-girls band. Wouldn't that be terrific if it wasn't just all about drinking?
Well, too bad it is, in a lot of cases.
Most of the time it is. Yeah,
yeah, it is. Yeah, it is. Why did you write this book?
I wrote it, because around that time I was quitting drinking, preoccupied with these old memories, and I was also hearing so much more about girls in my generation, how we'd caught up to boys in terms of drinking since the 90s, and I didn't agree with what I was hearing from the experts. The sociologists and the psychologists were saying girls like myself were drinking more because we were so liberated and self-confident and just happy and bursting with girl power, or because we wanted to prove we could drink like the men, match them shot for shot. And I thought that was a little bit silly, because in my own experience, for a long time, I think my female friends and I were drinking because it was an expression of our unhappiness or a lack of confidence, or we were drinking together because it was a way for us to bond as women, as female friends. Very rarely was I ever out there drinking like the guys, trying to drink like the boys.
So you think that it's the insecurities among yourself and your peers that really played a bigger part than super confident and, you know, being able to go there with the guys.
I think it's of course still hard to be a young person this day and age. Still hard to be 14 years old and be changing physically and trying to figure out what it means to be a woman. What with all the contradictions in the world about how we're supposed to be smart but sexy, strong but feminine. That was confusing, and I think. I don't know. We live in a Western culture anyways. We live in a culture of consumerism. We're taught that happiness is over there in the form of stuff. And if we have the right stuff, the right, we smell the right way, we dress the way, right way, people will like us. And I ate up those messages as a teenager, and the alcohol ads I saw I ate them up the same way I ate up cosmetic ads or something like that. I remember being really attracted to this Bacardi campaign in the 90s.
That's right,
This, yeah, button up by day, Bacardi by night campaign. And by day, these women were these meek little librarians and bookkeepers. And by night, they were wild when they were drinking Bacardi. And I thought, just like I would think, oh, the secret to being attractive, desirable is in that lipstick. I thought, oh, the secret for coming out of my shell, for being less introverted, is to drink. I need to find that bottle with the little bat on it, that rum.
That's true. You know, it kind of is, a liquid liberator in many, many ways, you know, both sexually, both socially, in a lot of ways. You know, it kind of frees us up when we drink.
Yeah.
So did you like the taste of alcohol at age 14?
Initially, no. It was awful. It wasn't particularly delicious. No. And actually, I think we also, in terms of looking at why women have caught up to men in the past, well, young girls have caught up to boys in the past 10 years, we have to look at those new drinks, those alternative beverages, the Alka-Pop, sometimes people call them, the Smirnoff Ices and Bacardi Silvers. You don't have to acquire taste for alcohol anymore.
No, you don't.
It tastes like soda. It tastes like juice. It's really sweet. Vodka's vanilla flavored now.
Right. I know. It's kind of frightening when you have, you know, the, what do they call them, the fruit drinks with the alcohol in them, and even hard cider. You know, that's a step in that direction.
Absolutely.
You know, just they're, hard cider.
Yeah. The taste is very attractive to kids. The packaging is. There's been great studies coming out of Georgetown, their Center for Alcohol Marketing and Youth. Teenage girls see 90% more ads for those alternative beverages than women who are 21 and older. Isn't that appalling?
Yeah, it is appalling. Yeah. What did you study in college?
I studied journalism. I graduated with a degree in journalism, but I studied creative writing and English while I was there. I met Miss Mary Carr, who wrote The Liars Club, classic memoir.
I remember that book. Yeah, you're very lucky to meet her.
Absolutely lucky.
Was she a mentor to you?
Yes, and I remember always just. Actually, at one point when I was graduating, right before I left college, we sat down and had our end-of-the-year advisory talk, and I told her I was going to go out there and be a journalist, and she said, Corinne, no, you can make your career doing creative writing. People do it. Just go be a coffee shop waitress and write on the side. And I thought, no, Mary, I'm going to go do the practical thing. I'm going to go work for a magazine or a newspaper. But, of course, I couldn't get a job. It was easier to get a book deal in the end, and I'm so glad that I did because I think I enjoy it a lot more.
Easier to get a book deal? How so?
Well, actually, it was funny. I love telling this story because I didn't know anyone in the publishing industry.
Right,
I didn't
in
have
Penguin,
any connections.
Right.
I knew I wanted to write this book. I only had 50 pages of it. But I knew I wanted to get a literary agent, that was important because publishing houses were far more inclined to read a manuscript that came from an agent as opposed to in a large, brown, unmarked envelope.
True.
So I went to the acknowledgement sections of books I liked and books I admired, or probably more importantly, books I thought my book would be like. And I saw who those writers thanked. I saw who their agents were. I looked them up in the phone book. I sent out hundreds of letters and got hundreds of rejection letters back. But eventually someone one day called me up and understood what I wanted to do.
So how much of your work did you send in with your letters? I mean, did you send in one chapter, outlines, or what? How did you do
it? In my initial letter, it was one page long. Yeah, I think what's so important is you don't have to outline every portion of your book, how it's going to go into too much detail. You just want to get whoever picks it up off their desk to get really excited about your voice. That's so important as a writer.
That's true. That's very, very true, because Penguin is a large publishing house.
Absolutely.
You know, it is, and you're very lucky for the first time out, you know, to go for the gold and get it.
Yeah, well, I honestly think anyone can do it and everyone should do it. It just takes persistence. I was talking to a woman in Barnes & Noble, their corporate headquarters, the other day, and she said, unless you're a writer with 100 rejection letters from literary agents, you still have more work to do.
Right. What would your advice be to young girls today that are toying with alcohol? I mean, you've had this experience, and what would you tell young people if you saw them engaging in this kind of activity?
Well, I think it's really important for girls to know that their bodies metabolize alcohol differently than men's. We, of course, weigh less. We have, unfortunately, more fat in our bodies and less water and fewer of the stomach enzymes that break down alcohol. Just so many factors that mean the same amount of alcohol can get us affect us differently on any given night. We're more susceptible to alcohol poisoning. Of course, we have other consequences to worry about, things like date rape and sexual assault. But more than that, I think it's important for young people to know that at this point in time, it's 40% of college women binge drink, so it's almost half and half.
Wow.
But it's not everyone. There's
That's
another
true.
Half. There's another
yeah.
half of people who are out there who you can bond with on some other real level because you like the same books, the same bands. I think those are the relationships that hold up over time, not the ones that are based on you like to drink and I like to drink, so we should hang out.
That's true. What do you think about family intervention with a person who has an alcohol problem?
I think it's absolutely important. If you see and recognize signs in someone close to you, I think unfortunately for women, we don't show a lot of signs. We're statistically less likely to drink and drive. We're just sort of more likely to become withdrawn and depressed. But it's good to just sit down with people sometimes, the ones we love who are close to us, and say, you seem different lately. Do you think maybe drinking has anything to do with it? And just to be supportive and let them know that they can talk to you without judgment. You'd rather know what's going on.
That's true. So anyhow, what are your plans now?
I'm working on a second book.
Okay,
I'm
what's
very
that
excited about?
About
it. It's going to be about anger and aggression. Because I think as women, unfortunately, we're still encouraged to repress it. We're taught it's not okay to get angry. It's not feminine. We're allowed to cry. That's extremely feminine. I think men have it opposite. They're allowed to get angry all they want, but God help them if they cry because they're such wusses when
true.
They do that.
That's
but
true.
It's an interesting topic, I think. We don't have a lot of language to describe anger in Western culture, I think. I've been reading a lot of Buddhist texts lately, which I really love. The specificity. Anger is seeing an animate or inanimate object, exaggerating its bad qualities and wishing it harm. I love that.
I love the Buddhist philosophy as well.
Too.
You know, live for the moment, you know.
Yes, anything that's a true source of joy can never be a source of misery.
That's
that
very
one.
True.
And this certainly that applies to my drinking.
Right. This is KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM. My name is Jade Pekala, and I'm here in studio with Corinne Zelkas, and she's the author of Smashed, Story of a Drunken Childhood. And her book is put out by Penguin Books, and it's a bestseller. And, I really appreciate you coming into KBOO today to talk.
Oh,
and
thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, good luck to you. And on your new publication as well,
thank
is
you.
Penguin working with
yeah.
you on that as well?
Yeah.
Do you have your own editor there?
I do. I've been working with Molly Stern at Viking.
All right. Good for you. Well, thank you so much, and keep up the good work. You're very young and fresh and on your way.
Thank you.
Okay. Bye.